All right. Happy Friday, everybody. Better yet, happy 5 o'clock Friday, everybody. Time for American Hit Radio, 90.3, 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD. The show is How Music Changed, and I'm your host, Tom Ryan. With me, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan. Of course, we started a new series just a few weeks ago on Jimi Hendrix. This is part three of the Jimi Hendrix story. What we've covered on the first two, actually, were songs that predate Jimi Hendrix as we know him. Today is the first show, really, where we can say where Jimi arrives. And we're going to basically take you from the beginning to the absolute beginning of his career, of his professional career. Not to the point where he was famous in the United States. We don't get there yet. But you'll see where we end up as we move forward. The first track I'm going to play today is a song, another one like we played, like the songs we played last week and the week before, with Jimi Hendrix as a session musician playing with other people. What's interesting about this is that Jimi Hendrix recorded a backing track with a bunch of musicians, and the song ended up being released four different times. There's a version of this song that by somebody called Lenny Howard that is entitled Keep the Faith, Baby. It's the exact same song with a different singer and different words. Then there's another version of the song that is called Wipe the Sweat, but with a guy named Lonnie Youngblood doing the vocals. Then there's a version of the song called Sweet Thang, which has George Scott singing the lyrics. But this version is also called Sweet Thang, but it's the Billy Lamont version. Billy Lamont with Jimi Hendrix. The song is Sweet Thang. So here's where the story really begins at this point. We had mentioned last week that Jimi was working uptown in the Harlem area and struggling really hard to make a living. failing and almost every time he tried to do anything. And he decided he was going to go down to Greenwich Village, figuring that he might have a better chance there. He was like very open-minded in terms of what his style could be. So, and what he wanted to do was very different than what Harlan was representing anyway. So he eventually immerses himself within the Greenwich Village scene, and he made friends with local artists like John Hammond Jr. and frequenting a lot of the small venues that were down there. He was flat broke, but he began taking part in afternoon jam sessions at a place called the Night Owl, where participating musicians were given free lunch. Hendrix set about drafting musicians from among the village regulars to form a new group of his own that he would be the front man. "I changed my name to Jimmy James," he said, "and called the group the Blue Flames." The quartet was made up of village musicians, including rhythm guitarist Randy Wolf, a local teenager that Hendrix called Randy California, because there were two guys in the band named Randy. So he said, okay, you know, you're going to be Randy California. He was only 15 years old at that time, Randy California. It's hard to believe. Now, the Blue Flames had very low-paying gigs at tiny venues like Café Wa, which was a basement club known more for its free afternoon admission and cheap evening cover charge than the caliber of performers that it represented. But the Blue Flames sets were filled with the blues favorites that Hendrix loved, but also his own interpretations of songs like Hey Joe, Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone, and the Trog's Wild Thing. Right here, I'm going to drop a song, getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but it's the very first recording of Hey Joe by Jimi Hendrix that was actually recorded later in the year, 1966, in October of 1966, after he had gone to Europe, and he was on tour with Johnny Hallyday in France, and they recorded the fourth performance that he had done over there, and Hey Joe was part of that. So this is the very first live recording of the Jimi Hendrix experience that you're going to hear, a live version of Hey Joe at the Olympia Theater in Paris, France, from October 18th, 1966.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, dig this right here.
All right. Some Live Jimmy on his own, finally. Okay, well, while Hendrix was downtown in Greenwich Village, he was found a little more success, but he was still struggling for recognition. But it was right around that time when he met a woman named Linda Keith, girlfriend of the Rolling Stones guitarist Keith Richards, and she became Jimmy's new champion. Linda was impressed by Jimmy's polite demeanor, and Jimmy, in return, immediately took to Linda. They weren't a couple, but Linda's assertiveness, not unlike Pridgeon Fane, who we were talking about, who was helping him when he was up in Harlem, really impressed him, and their friendship accelerated rapidly. Linda talked up the guitarist to as many well-connected friends as she could, and she knew a lot of people. She brought the Rolling Stones manager, Andrew Lou Goldham, down to see Jimmy, and she also got the Sire Records, the head of Sire Records, Seymour Stein, to come and see Hendrix on her recommendation. They both passed. Said, no way, can't do anything with this guy. Then in 1976, Linda met Chaz Chandler, the bass player, ex-bass player for the Animals. And he was trying to start a career as a record producer. Now, Chandler was looking to find an artist to cover the song Hey Joe. He was obsessed with that song because he was convinced that it had really strong commercial potential if it was performed by the right person. So Linda encouraged Chandler to go see Jimmy perform at Café Wa. And when Hendrix opened his set with Hey Joe, Chandler was floored, transfixed, and unable to believe that no one had spotted Hendrix before. Like, I'm going to be the guy? These other people are turning him down? He couldn't believe it. So when Linda introduced the two after the set, Chandler immediately asked Hendrix to come to England to record the song Hey Joe. He promised to make him a star. So this meeting would change history. Jimmy's initial reaction, though, was simply a practical response to the hard life that he was living in New York. I said that I may as well go because nothing much was happening. We were making something near $3 a night, and we were starving. So Chandler set about securing a passport for the guitarist, and the two left for London on September 23rd, 1966. And that track we just heard, by the way, was October 18th, less than a month after Hendrix arrived in Europe. Chandler switched gears from musician to manager quickly. It was Chandler who suggested that Hendrix change the spelling of his first name, and Jimmy, J-I-M-I, Hendrix, was born. So once in London, Hendrix quickly filled Chandler's grand dream. Late in September, Chandler bumped into Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce at a popular club called the Cromwellian Club, where all the cool, famous people hung out. He spoke of Hendrix, obviously, in glowing terms. Jack Bruce and Eric Clapton were clearly intrigued, instructing Chandler that if Hendrix was as good as he claimed, he should bring the guitarist to their show and jam with them when they played on October 1st, 1966, at the Regent Polytechnic. As promised, Chandler showed up and escorted Hendrix to the show, and the two found their way backstage, where Chandler encountered a very reluctant Ginger Baker, always a recalcitrant dude, the drummer for Cream. Baker, with whom Chandler had enjoyed a very long friendship, said that he would allow Hendrix to sit in with the group only on the condition that Eric Clapton remain on stage, just in case the jam session fell apart. Hendrix took full advantage of the opportunity, tearing into his frenzied reworking of a Howlin' Wolf tune called Killing Floor. Clapton left the stage in a daze. Chandler ran over to Clapton backstage, worried about his reaction. He needn't have. The first thing Clapton said, is he really that effing good? At that, Chandler knew that the word for his new protege's remarkable ability would soon spread throughout London's music community. Chandler also arranged for Jimmy to sit in with jazz rock organist Brian Auger as a French pop sensation named Johnny Hallyday looked on. The jam session really impressed Hallyday, who was so taken by Hendrix that he offered Chandler an opportunity for the guitarist to open for him on his upcoming French tour. Hendrix didn't even have a band to play with yet, but Chandler jumped at the opportunity and said yes. That version of Hey Joe that we heard before was from the fourth show of that tour with Johnny Hallyday, with two members who we'll get to, Mitch Mitchell and Noel Redding, who barely knew Hendrix at this time. And the song that we're going to hear now is that song that blew Eric Clapton away, recorded at that exact same show on October 18th at the Olympia Theater in Paris, warming up for Johnny Hallyday. Jimi Hendrix and The Experience performing Killing Floor.
Chanteur noir américain, Johnny a demandé de venir exprès pour nous ce soir. Pour la première fois à l'Olympia, Jimi Hendrix!
So we're going to get into a little bit of information here. Taking a lot of this text, by the way, from a book simply called Hendrix by Janie Hendrix and John McDermott. It's a big hardcover booklet. Really, that's like an album. It's so big. Now, though Chaz Chandler had enjoyed a string of international chart successes as a member of the Animals, he had very little money to show for his efforts. Chandler had been one of the five original Animals, which left him with a modest income after management commissions and expenses were paid. Moreover, many of the Animals' hit singles had been cover versions of songs composed by other people, which meant that they didn't make any royalty from those income from those records. So Chandler knew that in order to launch Hendrix using his own limited finances, he would have to take advantage of the Hallyday tour opportunity. He needed to move quick to get a group for Jimmy, and used his connections as a member of the Animals to do so. Aware that lead vocalist of the band, Eric Burdon, planned to form a new configuration of the group to continue his career, Chandler used auditions that were advertised for Eric Burdon and the New Animals to recruit musicians to back Hendrix with his guitar and vocals. The first musician selected was Noel Redding, an aspiring guitarist who had traveled from Kent to London's Birdland Club, hoping to secure a position in Eric Burdon's band. When he arrived, though, that slot had been filled. Chaz wandered up to me and asked if I could play bass, Redding remembered. I told him that I didn't play bass, but I would give it a go. Chandler lent Redding his bass, and Hendrix, joined by Ainsley Dunbar, yes, that Ainsley Dunbar, on drums and Mike O'Neill on keyboards, ran through a series of chord changes. This American gentleman with a funny pair of shoes and a funny overcoat just sort of told me the chords, and we went through them, and then we played three tunes. That was it, Redding recalled. There were no vocals involved. Then this American bloke said, "Do you want to go down and have a pint of bitter or something?" So we went down to this place next door and had this discussion. I was asking him all about the American music scene, Sam Cooke, Booker T and the MGs. That was my sort of favorites. And he was asking me about the English scene because he'd only been there for about a week. Then he said, "Do you want to join my group?" And that was it. Finding a suitable drummer, though, proved more difficult. Hendrix and Redding jammed with Ainsley Dunbar, John Banks of the Mersey Beats, and Mitch Mitchell, who had won praise for his jazz-influenced work with Georgie Fame and the Blue Flames. Days after their auditions, with Hendrix deadlocked over whether to use Ainsley Dunbar or Mitch Mitchell, Chandler flipped a coin. Mitchell came up the winner. It's amazing that Ainsley Dunbar didn't get that job over the flip of a coin. With a bassist and a drummer in place, Jimi Hendrix's experience, as Chandler named the group, was complete. Jimmy called home to Seattle, where his dad had remarried and adopted his new wife's young daughter, Janie, who, by the way, is the person who's responsible for writing this book that I'm reading. And Jimmy told Al, "I'm on the way to the big time. They're forming this band around me, and I'm going to have a bass player and a drummer, these two English guys, and we're going to be called the Jimi Hendrix Experience." With their public debut now just days away, the Experience needed to build a stage repertoire. Their slot on that Halliday tour, which we just heard two songs from, called for three or four songs a night. So they built a set list around Hey Joe and Wild Thing, which we heard, and a couple of other Hendrix staples like Have Mercy, Land of a Thousand Dances, Everybody Needs Somebody to Love, cover tunes. They didn't have any original songs yet, none. No song that another group hadn't already made famous. But the group's energy and enthusiasm carried them through the first three performances of the tour. In Paris, Hendrix thrilled the sold-out house at the famed Olympia Theater, winning over an audience that the guitarist described as tougher than the Apollo's rowdy crowds. Their enthusiastic reception on tour boosted the group's confidence and sent them back to London, riding a wave of momentum. Hendrix recorded the basic track for Hey Joe at D-Lane Lee Studios in London, including a lead vocal, but neither he nor Chandler considered the effort to be his best performance. While Chandler's faith in Hendrix's abilities was unshakable, Jimmy held deep reservations about the quality of his voice prior to the initial recording session. "It was the first time I ever tried to sing on a record, actually," admitted Jimmy. "I was too scared to sing." Chandler then escorted Hendrix to a host of different London studios in the weeks that followed, trying to perfect Jimmy's take on that one song, Hey Joe. When it was finally mastered, the group focused on material for the flip side of the single. They now had ran afoul of the same problem that they had faced when the Experience established their repertoire. Hendrix had no original material prepared. The guitarist suggested a cover of the popular R&B dance hit Land of a Thousand Dances, but Chandler refused, begging him to compose a new original song. Hendrix eventually rose to the challenge, responding with a song called Stone Free. The song, which was the first Hendrix had ever composed for the Experience, was recorded and mixed in a single day. We will get to this next week based upon its release date. Meanwhile, we'll go a little bit further with the story. Why not? With his new single in his hand, Chandler and his partner, the Animals' manager Michael Jeffrey, sought for a record deal. The first up was at Decca. Decca is where Dick Rowe was. He was the guy who turned down the Beatles Well, he also turned down Hendrix. People don't talk about that, but he's a two-time loser in that regard. Chandler had a little bit better success when he met Kit Lambert, who was the co-manager of The Who. Lambert and his partner, Chris Stamp, were launching a label called Track Records, which was distributed by Polydor, a pretty well-known European label. Lambert watched Hendrix perform at the Scotch of St. James Club in London and was so blown away by the guitarist that he and Chandler wrote out a deal on a beer mat right there and then. Even prior to the release of Hey Joe, though, the experience had become the talk of the London music community, fueled mostly by curiosity about Hendrix and his music. Here was a heretofore undiscovered American artist imbued with the same authenticity of Muddy Waters, Elmore James, Buddy Guy, and other heroes whose music had informed the burgeoning British blues boom. I think this is a good time for me to play that A-side of that single that we were talking about. Hey Joe, before he had even written another song, this was the A-side of his first single. This is the pre-master version of it, though, not the one that you would hear in the single. So you might be able to get to that perhaps next week. But here's the pre-master version of Hey Joe.
Hey Joe. Oh, God damn. One more time. Hey, make the voice a little lower and the band a little louder, okay? Oh, where you going with the... Okay, wait. Let me get the word. I'm going down to shoot my old lady. You know, I caught her messing around with another man. I'm going down to shoot my lady. You know, I caught her messing around. Shot your woman down. Hey Joe, I heard you shot your woman down. You shot her down now. Yes, I did. I shot her. And now I'm gonna ride out of town. I gotta make it. I shot my baby. And now I'm gonna ride out of town. Yeah. Oh, shoot him one more time again.
Reason Hendrix had a career is because Chaz Chandler was totally obsessed with that track, figuring that it was going to be a huge hit for somebody. And here you can hear Jimmy in with Chaz in the background, more or less trying to help him work on an arrangement for that song. That's why you hear him breaking up in the beginning. Jimmy's still kind of freaked out about singing at this point in time. So meanwhile, Club Experiences by The Experience club appearances by the Experience at small venues like the Bagatelle's. We're usually packed full with people, all eager to witness this amazing guitarist that Chaz Chandler had imported from America. Suddenly, we noticed that we were filling places, said Redding, Noel Redding. Suddenly, you'd look up and you'd see John Lennon over in the corner, or Paul McCartney and Bill Wyman watching us play. Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, and Pete Townsend also flocked to the Experience's club appearances to bear witness to Hendrix's seemingly limitless ability. Here is another pre-master take of the song that was going to be the band's second single. This time, it's Foxy Lady. All right. I should mention you're listening to 90.3 WHPC, WHPCHD. The show is American Hit Radio, the Friday edition, which is how music changed. I'm Tom Ryan with Heidi Morales Ryan running the board, and we do this every Friday. We're in the midst of a series on Jimi Hendrix, and we are just about at the point where his career begins to take an incredible turn to the better, where we're at right now. That song, Foxy Lady, was actually something. It was one of the first songs that Jimmy wrote, along with Stone Free. some things that were just beginning to pop into his head. And he picked up on it because one of those songs that we played just the previous week when he was like doing studio sessions and making no money and living in poverty was a song called My Girl, She's a Fox. And he was a background player on that. So he probably was thinking about that when he wrote Foxy Lady, taking that idea and just changing the, you know, into a chords arrangement of something that he could say was his own. So Jimi Hendrix was Chaz Chandler's only client. So this made it very easy for him to really carefully consider and develop every aspect of Jimi Hendrix's new career. Chandler and his wife Lottie opened their home to him, and Hendrix moved into their Berkeley Street apartment in London. The move to Chandler's home provided Hendrix with the first stable living environment that he had enjoyed in years, and it produced a marked impact on him and his creative output. New songs began to take form, like Foxy Lady, with Chandler using his keen pop sensibility to act as a sounding board. In the flat, he would position himself across from Jimmy, listening intently to new material and offering comments about arrangements and all other little bits of refinements. And living with Chandler had a pronounced influence on Jimmy's lyrics and poetry, too. Chandler had this penchant for science fiction novels, and this helped shape Hendrix's new material, because he would be living in Chandler's house. He'd be going through his library and reading some of his books. So the roots for future experience classics like Third Stone from the Sun and Up from the Skies trace back to the inspiration that Hendrix was discovering while he lived in Chaz Chandler's house and would often find himself reading the books in his library. Here's one of those songs that would, again, this is a an overdub session way before the finished version that you would hear on the album, of Third Stone from the Sun, which is one of the most psychedelic things that Jimmy ever did, and he's already 100% there with this. What's really interesting is you're going to hear about how on the album he always says, and you'll never hear surf music again. And everybody kind of thought that that was like a negative thought, that Jimmy would say that. Like, what did he have against surf music? The thing is, they were playing with the dials when they made the final mix, and they took out what Jimmy said next. So you're going to hear it perfectly clearly on this version when he then says, sounds like a lie to me. It's about 9 minutes long, so sit back and enjoy some psychedelic music that Jimmy's coming up with at this point in time. This is recorded in January of 1967.
Starfleet to Scout Ship, will you please give me your position? Over.
I am in orbit around the planet, the third planet of the sun known in this hall.
May this be Earth? Over.
Positive. It is known by the to have some form of species.
Well, we'll just take a look then.
Hey, we better do this again, because if somebody puts in the bath there, it's going to have more hell than fuck. Well, I do, if the vicar's daughter played it, it would be about the speed, would it?
Oh, beautiful. Starfleet to shop. Wait, one more time. I was gonna. Starfleet to Scout Ship, please give your position. Over.
I am in orbit around the third planet of star known as Sun. Over.
May this be Earth. Over.
Positive. It is known to have some form of intelligent species. Over.
I think we should take a look. Strange, beautiful grass of green with your majestic silver seas. Your mysterious mountains I'd wish to see closer. May I land my kinky machine? Although your world wonders me with your majestic
and superior cackling hen. Your people I do not understand, so to you I shall put an end. And you never hear surf music again. That sounds like a lie to me. Come on, man, let's go home.
Never.
was. This is how Chaz Chandler was so incredibly important to Jimmy in so many ways. I mean, that's him in the studio fooling around with all these crazy ideas and mixing all of the stuff together and coming up with a pretty masterful psychedelic song that really, like, it out Pink Floyd's Pink Floyd in a lot of ways. Now, with all of Chandler's hard work and his real steadfast belief in both Jimi Hendrix and the commercial prospects of the single Hey Joe, he and Jimmy were rewarded when that song, issued in December of 1966, spent 10 weeks on the UK singles chart. The song reached number 6 in February of 1967. It's as high as it would go. More importantly, though, the success of Hey Joe established Hendrix as a rising star across Europe. While the song climbed the chart, Hendrix was ready to prepare his next single, Purple Haze, which was written backstage at the Uppercut Club on Boxing Day, December 26th in 1966, as Chaz Chandler remembered it. The riff had come to him about 10 days before. I kept hearing him play it at the flat, and I was knocked out by it. I told him to keep working on that, saying, that's got to be your next single. That afternoon at the Uppercut, he started playing the riff in the dressing room, and I said, write the rest of that. So we did. When the song was finished, Chandler then urged Hendrix into the studio, very eager to produce the song that he instinctively knew would land the experience back on the charts. As a producer, Chandler was smart because he was like a guiding principle focused on good preparation in advance of recording so that they wouldn't waste time or money. In this instance, they're going to Olympic Studios, which is a big step up. And this is where things really change, because now you've got Jimmy, who's writing his own material suddenly, Chaz Chandler, who's coming in as a producer, but they've got Eddie Kramer now as their engineer. And Eddie Kramer is a huge, huge, important part of Jimi Hendrix at this point of his career. And here they are basically performing a version in the studio of Purple Haze. This is an early version, which was part of the master eventually, but... this is before they had an ending for the song, and there's a few different guitar parts here and there, so you'll recognize different bits before we get to the actual album, which will probably be what we're going to be doing next week. But here is Jimi Hendrix with Eddie Kramer for the first time preparing Purple Haze. We'll be right back.
girl. Nanny Maybelline number 9. Mary had a little lamb.
All right. It's nice to hear them fooling around in the studio and having fun with these like early versions of these, knowing where we're going. We will be looking at the album Are You Experienced and the actual single releases in chronological order as they were released as we move through the series. We'll be doing that next week. I'm looking forward to doing that. But thank you very much for listening. I'm having a great time with this Hendrix series. This is a load of fun for me. And what I'm going to end with now, because we only have a couple minutes anyway, is a small track from these exact same sessions at Olympic Studios where you just heard that early version of Purple Haze, is a song that they recorded that I think they were going to intend to use for the album, but they ended up more or less just forgetting it. They were putting on the, you keep right down the chart whatever song it is that you're doing, and a lot of them didn't even have titles. So they were just things like title number 2, title number 3, title number 4, and eventually they would turn into a song as they get written and you know, built up. This was called title number 3 and totally abandoned. So it's just a little snippet about 2 minutes long of a song that could have been something but was neglected because they ended up having other bits that were even better. So we'll leave you with title number 3 and we'll be back next week with a couple of actual genuine recordings that you're probably familiar with. See you then. Have a great weekend.